Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So once Srila Prabhupada mentioned to Jayapataka Maharaj, he said that actually many of you are intimate associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And you came into this world to assist me in my mission. If we look at Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, we very much see that. We also wonder that since Maharaj left so early, was it maybe that Prabhupada called him to another mission somewhere else? Maybe that Prabhupada now is in another universe and called on his most reliable dearmost man, and that Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj would have joined Prabhupada there. Sometimes we think like that. He was undoubtedly an outstanding person, even in his material life. If we read the biography, then we see that he grew up in the United States of America, where the Afro-American community was still underprivileged at that time. Martin Luther King had not yet marched for equal rights. That was still to come. It was in that America that John Travers took his birth. It was in that America that he grew up in very simple conditions. But even there, I remember some highlights from the biography. I remember that he was part of a Christian prayer group, and they were praying to heal people. And in those, and they said that there was a person who was blind, and just by their prayers, that person actually got the sight, and some other miracles like that were ascribed to the prayer group. Certainly, he could pray. We see that in his writings, in four books called The Beggar. In these books, he is really praying. The first one, I remember, was dedicated to praying. Second one to mercy. The third one was dedicated to overcoming the false ego. And the last one of The Beggar, of the fourth volume, was to die before dying, which is he was not just writing some books to entertain people. In these books, The Beggars, he was revealing his identity. I am a beggar before the Lord. And simply as a beggar, I'm praying for his mercy, and I'm preparing to die before dying. Of course, going earlier into Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's life, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was a already powerful in the sense that he emerged from that black ghetto and came out as one of the very few, almost symbolic, black students in Princeton University, where you had the handful just to make up a quota. So he was there and obviously did very well and graduated from that prestigious university, majoring in psychology, something that comes back in his later writings. Even in his student days, he connected with leaders, African leaders of that time, such as Martin Luther King and others, and they all recognized him immediately as someone who could have made a career in politics. And the reason was not that he was such a diplomat or such a politician. No, that was not it. He was truly a leader of men. He was never just someone who thought in a small way. He always thought in a big way, in the interest of many people. It was natural to him. In Nigeria, he spent a significant amount of time preaching in Africa. At one point, he spent most of his time in Africa. And in 1990, he was given the position of being a chief, right? Not just an external thing, but because he had influenced so many people and led so many people, it's because he was like that. He was thinking like that. He was thinking as a leader of many people. And wherever he went, it was like that. When Maharaj went to Soweto, he danced. He danced in front of hundreds of devotees who went with him on a Mahahari Nam, and it was like a powerful victory dance of Krishna consciousness through the streets of Soweto. Not ordinary at all. He was like that. People recognized that he was such a leader. Therefore, he was naturally acceptable to heads of state, and he met them frequently on different occasions, and was very comfortable with that upper echelon of people, because he was thinking with the same broadness of mind that the leaders of many men have. Therefore, also in our society, he came to a leading position. Still, he was not what you call just a man who was representing an institution and who derived his prestige from his role in the institution. Far from it. He was an individual who was ready to experiment, and for the sake of preaching, venture out and try different strategies. So in America, in Washington, he opened the Institute for Applied Spiritual Technology. Yeah, that's a little a mouthful. And there, yes, he met with many leading personalities from that platform. So he was one of the first leaders in ISKCON who created his own platform. He didn't preach from a temple, but preached from his institute, which worked very well for the especially the Afro-American community, who needed a different approach. Yes, he was an individual. I remember he had this cane, you know, with like a big lion's head on it, and he's walking around in Mayapur with this special cane. Not every some GVC stuff, this cannot be. He was not stereotype, that was for sure. After I took sannyas, I met him shortly after. He took my danda and he said, "I'll show you." And then he did a war dance with the danda. And said, "See, this is how you use them." Anyway, I'm still trying to learn. I got one. I still have a master, but I'm afraid so. Maybe not possible. Something extraordinary. Such a dancer. Not just was Maharaj a very wonderful dancer who could make amazing jumps and movements. That wasn't it. He had the potency to include people. He was, as I said, a leader of people who would include others, who would make everyone join hands and just dance all together. He was that kind of a person who thought of everyone. And of course, this message was the message of the ambassador of love. He stressed love as a main message constantly in so many public presentations. He had spent many years in Africa and did not come so much to Mayapur during that time. Then when he returned, he came back with a new message, the message of love, and he was the most popular Swami at the time in ISKCON. And like now he had maybe Radhanath Maharaj, you know, everyone Radhanath Maharaj. At that time, Bhakti Theatre Maharaj, Bhakti Theatre Maharaj, Bhakti Theatre Maharaj. He was at that time the most popular. That message of love, right, is something he showed at the end. Because the process of leaving this world, he did not make that just a private affair. He did not just turn away from the world in a mood from, well, now I have to go, bye-bye. No, he really, in an intense way, connected with everyone, especially his disciples, and so many others. And whoever was ready, he would give them so much energy that actually he was comforting people, he was inspiring them. He was giving. Instead of taking some support, instead of, you know, waiting for the sympathy of the visitors to sort of cheer him up in the midst of the misery of dying, he was the one who gave everyone fresh energy, fresh inspiration, with whomever he dealt with, and he just grew in that to a proportion of spiritual depth and ecstasy that it was extraordinary. He was beaming. He was just full of effulgence at that time, and one could see. You know, in America they say, put your money where your mouth is, right? And he did it. He showed. He spoke all these years of love and love and love. And then at the end, he really showed that he had it. That it wasn't just a speech, but that he had that love in his heart. And he gave it to everyone. And therefore, we understand that His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj is a very intimate, special disciple of Srila Prabhupada who really did something very substantial, very substantial in the short time that he was in this world. And surely, through him, many will attain to the spiritual world. His disciples who follow him faithfully will surely go back to Godhead without a doubt. Therefore, on this Vyasa Puja Day, we're honoring the appearance of such an Acharya and who has brought so much grace and mercy into this world. Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami Krishna Ki Jaya.